This is a work session of the Oak Ridge Board of Education. My microphone. What I was about to say was this is a work session of the Board of Education, and the work session is on the Oak Ridge Schools FY 2016 proposed budget, which we all have a copy of in our possession one way or another. What I thought we'd do tonight, Dr. Borchers, is let you make any comments on the document that you would like to make. And then let board members ask questions, make comments, or give direction as we follow up with our next meeting, which is tomorrow night, again at 5:30, would be the meeting that we go over the line items by line items, if that's what the board chooses to do. So with that being said, Dr. Borchers.
Okay, thank you. I have some brief slides with some updated numbers, and we tried to include some of the things we heard from you at the last meeting for some clarity, and there'll be some key pieces here that I kind of need some direction from the board as we move forward to hone up that line by line and to make it as accurate as possible. Put our seven keys up here again. I think it's always important to talk about that. As I mentioned at the foundation meeting, we did get some good news today on our quick scores and hope to share more and more with the community when we can do that. That is our intent. That's our focus at college and career readiness, and that's why we're here, and our budget reflects that. Our new updated deficit is just under $800,000, but that's our closest number that we have at this point. Of course, it's always moving a little bit up and down. We have our number one priority there is to attract and retain high quality staff. And as we talked about last time, getting that raise for our staff, all staff, not just teaching staff. I think that was a point of clarity. All staff would get that 3% raise. We have some pieces that we'd like to include. Again, none of that has changed from the last time we've talked, but I am going to come to a slide because you asked what we're doing with some enrollment changes and things like that for other positions. So the grand total there with the salary and new positions is 1.7. That brings the total piece then to 2.5 million. We talked a lot about fund balance in our last meeting, and now being here 2 years and hearing the suggestion that the fund balance is too high, and I think that's all up for interpretation, of course, but after a lot of discussion, after working with Karen, we feel we have the possibility to use the amount that you're seeing in front of you on the screen there, which would then leave our request to the City Council for just over $800,000. It took me a while to be comfortable with it, and I'm still trying to be comfortable with using that much fund balance. But as I look at the progression of where our budgets are going, this is probably a good faith effort, I think, to meet the demands that we have this year. We believe we can still make cash flow, but the days of putting in bleachers out of fund balance will be over until the revenue becomes different in the future. And I think that'll have to be clearly stated as we move forward, because there won't be that fallback to begin with. Another point here. You're basically looking, as you go back to that 2.5 number, it's important to remember that will be basically, give or take, you know how things fluctuate year to year, that's our starting point for FY17. So that's pretty daunting number as a starting point for FY17. And I just want to make sure that we're all fully aware of what that looks like.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure I understand. That 2.5 number, that is after, if we get the 873,000 requests from the city, I think that's our 811,000 requests from the city, then will our deficit next year be 2.5 million, or go to the next slide. Oh. Will it be 2.5 less 811, or does that already account for 811?
It would be less the 811.
Okay. So we're looking at the 1.7 number.
Assuming
basically.
The city dollars to us are reoccurring and not just one time.
Mm-hmm. So that's one item for discussion, and then I'll go through the next slide, which will be, I think, another item of discussion. As we talked about staff enrollment and changes, reductions and things, the board asked to have a little bit more information on that because I was saying we were taking care of a few other things with that enrollment reduction. So we do have, we thought we had two at the elementary, but this is how that enrollment game works. We had a kindergarten class, actual signups bigger than we thought, so we only gleaned one from the elementary due to class size. So we would be reducing a spot at Linden. We also have the opportunity to reduce through attrition. None of the next three positions there would be a person losing a job. Those are retirements, they wouldn't be coming back. And as we look at that large deficit, should we use the fund balance this coming school year, I would ask the board, and we've talked about it in work session before, I would like to move forward with, I'm calling it right-sizing, but just making sure that we're putting people where they're most needed throughout our district, and then to be able to come back to the board come budget time next year. Not that I want to cut anybody, but maybe we need to reallocate what we currently have in a common sense manner. And I do this because the attrition piece is a little bit easier without the timeline to have a full-out right-sizing plan, if you will. So in our deficit number, we have included these three pieces being lost to attrition. And then the pieces we kind of took care of, you'll see down there on the additions. I mentioned the second one there last week about not having to ask for the elementary behavior teacher position. The other position would be a Jefferson Middle School teacher. We knew that there was an inconsistency with the number of staff between Robertsville and Jefferson, and as they're working on RTI and creating that plan for RTI, we learned that Jefferson would not be able to carry out the same calendar and plan for RTI that Robertsville would. So it's an equitable issue, and it's an RTI implementation issue as well. So with some of those reductions, we have taken care of those things, and then the other additions are the same positions that you saw on the previous slide. With that, I guess we can go back. The two biggies I need, and there may be additional from the board, but is the discussion on fund balance and the discussion on losing some positions to attrition.
I just wanted to make a point before you start. Another thing to remember about the $1.7 million is that throughout the budget, we had to identify items that were going to be funded with non-recurring money. So in essence, I selected things so we had something. They can be changed if you choose to. But that figure of $1.75 million is something that we do have to identify, and what it means is next year, let's say all of the equipment in the budget is funded with non-recurring money, then next year there's no base for equipment at all unless you choose to put it in. So just to kind of further explain that a little bit.
Let me ask, while we're there on fund balance, give us a brief scenario, if you can, of what the balance sheet, I guess is the best way to ask this, what the balance sheet looks like in fund balance after, if we were to take the 1.75 million out.
Well, the recommendation allows us to have 2.5 million left in fund balance to make our cash flow monthly obligations. It also allows for approximately $200,000 to be left in fund balance in case of an emergency, an equipment failure or something along that line. But that is about as close as we felt. We don't feel comfortable about it, but if we have to feel comfortable about it, that's about as close as we want to get.
And that leaves us where we are supposed to be by state law as far as
it leaves us maintain. More than state law, more. Yes. But as we talked about before, state law is one threshold, and then the actual cash in your district is another. So yes, we are in good shape for the state requirement.
Ms. Engel.
Well, in using this much from the fund balance, I went back and looked at one of the previous PowerPoints that you sent out that listed the top three capital needs for this year. And it was the Willowbrook roof, Robertsville HVAC system, and the Willowbrook HVAC package. And I did not find those in the budget. So if we use this much of the fund balance and one or more of those three things fails, then what do we do?
I think that was the conversation, and we can both double up on that, Karen. And I think, Mr. Eby, you've said it a couple times of that clarity, I think, has to be made to the city to make sure they realize. And what you didn't include, I'm looking at Alan, is the high school track. I mean, we don't have track meets. We don't. I mean, so there are excuse me, so many competing priorities. But yes, we would not be able to fix those things without assistance then from the city.
And also, if you remember, at a previous meeting, we talked about some utility savings in this year's budget. And we originally thought that possibly we could use some of those to do that those types of projects. But what we ended up doing is assuming that those utility savings would go back to fund balance, and then the 361.1 up there that you see, that's basically being covered by this year's utility savings. Otherwise, it would be tacked on even more to the use of fund balance.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah, I think that as we've talked, it's very important that, you know, we be very clear to City Council what we've done. I think we have met essentially what they've indicated to us that they would like to see done, is that we not carry such a large fund balance and we pay for this. And so I think this is a good use of it. If we do have an emergency like a failed heating and ventilation system, then as City Council has told us in the past, come to them with an emergency, you know, get it funded that way. They've told us that's the way they want to do the capital equipment, so we're going through that process. So I think this is all consistent with what City Council is telling us. It's critical that they also understand that we're using this for funds that will be recurring cost in the future. And so what we're doing is we are putting off 1 year, asking for a significant increase in funds so that they can get higher revenues from Kroger's and some of these other things that are coming in. You know, we're giving a year to do that, which again, I think is something they want. But I think it's critical that we do fund the teacher salary, that we fund these things in this program. And I think basically we just got to make sure the City Council understands what we've done and why we've done it.
Are we aware, and maybe I've heard a number, but I'm not sure, are we aware in the city's budget an amount of money that will come to the schools for capital projects?
My last two or three conversations with city manager has been he's projecting $200,000 would come to us for capital improvements.
And that has that money been projected in this budget anywhere? The use of that money?
Alan would have his project priority list that he would bring to the board for that. That would be separate from this budget because we actually complete the project and then send the bill to the city.
Okay. While we're on fund balance, let's just stay there. Any other additional questions in regard to that, particularly from you guys over here? Please don't, and I know you won't, but if you've got a question, don't think, well, maybe I shouldn't ask this question. You should.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. I think I'm just trying to soak it in because, in all honesty, I have really mixed feelings about it. I think I totally understand the position that we're in, because based on my read of most recent history, if we maintain the fund balance, the likelihood that we'll get the funding that we need for the capital expenditures that we have is zero. But going forward, if we choose to go ahead and lean in, that does presume that the city leans in with us, right? That when we do have a genuine capital need, and Alan has his list, and we've already got a list of things that are near critical, as Angie said, I mean, we could easily be into a situation where something catastrophic fails and we have an expense. We really are then at the mercy of the city to take care of that. And again, that just, it produces some mixed feelings for me.
I don't think he will mind, and help me, those who were there, because I'll probably say this wrong. I don't think he'll mind, since he did say it in public, but Dr. Tom Mason did not, at the foundation presentation of grants, I felt like issued a challenge. And when he said that it was time to stop trying to do more with less, but it was time to do a little bit more with a little more. Is that close?
I think what he says, you know, we've been doing more with less for so many years, and then we're doing less with less, you know, so that we're not even doing what we were doing in the past, so we've gone to less with less, and now it's time to do more with a little more. And, you know, and I think he said basically it's time for, you know, funding to come up so that we can do more.
And your comment's absolutely right. I mean, we're, those of us who have been here for a while know that the opportunity of going, we've tried over the last several years different methods, I think. I think this year we have followed the guidelines that the city has asked us to follow. We've corresponded both with the superintendent and the city manager meeting, with collective meetings with the Board of Education and City Council, appearances at the Budget and Finance Committee, presentations and opportunities for council to see our presentations. You just reach a point, and again, I thought Dr. Mason had another great analogy when talking about the 600 workers that are going to be present at CVMR. When they come out of that drive, which way are they going to turn? Are they going to turn to head to Kingston? Are they going to go to West Knoxville? Or are they going to turn left and come to Oak Ridge? And you need to, I think, you know, his point is so well taken. It's time to just, for us to stop saying, well, we're going to stretch it out, we can do this, we're going to move this. We've reached a point where we don't have those opportunities to do that are not left anymore. And the only opportunity to do what we need to do is through fund balance. And we may make some adjustments throughout this budget process, but nothing of the magnitude of what we're talking about right here. And if the city is sincere in their efforts, as they said at one of their meetings, that, and I believe I heard almost unanimous across the table there, that they would support increases for both city staff and our teaching staff, that they are wanting to be involved, as we've talked about in the CIP projects, by getting them ranked across the city. Well, if that's what they say, then it's time to go beyond saying that and take action. Mr. Eby.
I think another way that he said it, too, is when he did use that analogy about coming, you know, when you come out of CVMR, 600 jobs, average salary, $90,000 a year because they are engineers. You know, are they going to go south to Kingston? Are they going to go south to Knoxville? Are they going to come east to Oak Ridge? He said, that is the question. That is the question. And what we have to do is do everything that we can to show them the reason to come to Oak Ridge. And, you know, we are at a crossroad. The city is on the verge of doing some great things, growing. We got the Kroger's. We got a lot more retail. We're going to have the mall. Going back to that survey, those surveys that was done, you got to bring new families, young families into the city. What does that is the schools. We're not talking, I remember last year when we were talking about a 31-cent increase or something like that, I think that averaged like $180 a year per household, which was $15 a month. Here we're talking 9 cents on the tax rate. So, you know, nine is one third. So $5. I don't know. We need to get that number. But the number we're talking about is you know, less than $10 a month, much less than $10 a month for average household. You know, we flush that money down a commode so many different ways, and we can use that to invest in our students. And that's what we got to do.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, you know, we did some preliminary looks at, you know, some areas we could cut. We did talk about transportation. I asked Karen, I said, well, what would happen if we did a 5% cut on all of our, basically our capital budgets at schools and things like that? And I think it was a little over $200,000, wasn't it, Karen? In the transportation savings, we were looking at 100. So the big buckets that we can delve into after this year, should we make this decision, those are gone. And then you start talking about people. And I'm not, you know, trying to be gloom and doom here, but if you take that $300,000 off the 175 here, I mean, that's the equivalent of 20 to 25 lost positions. And I'm not saying where those positions would come from, but if there's no additional revenue, next year will be an incredibly trying time. And to your point, Keys, I think as soon as we finish this budget cycle, we need to get the CIP plan in place. We need to have a budget plan as we go into the next year. We can simply not wait until next March to have this discussion, because if we do, I fear we're not going to have a good turnout from that.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just a quick question. As I look at the 1.75 coming out of fund balance, I haven't done all the, I'm still working on my homework, still getting there. I haven't done all the math. I did notice that you had noted in the line by line what is a one-time expense. How many of those one-time expenses link back to the 1.7? So what percentage of the 1.7 could be accounted for in the one-time expenses?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the sobering piece. I mean, these we will have to deal with this. What we're doing here is, again, not to repeat everything we've said, but the history that we've heard from the City Council on our fund balance, I think we're doing that in good faith. As Dr. Mason, we're using his name a lot tonight, but as he and others have said, you know, there are positive times coming. It's how fast they're going to be here for us to really see those dollars come into our community. This buys us a year. Hopefully things get a little bit better, and I think then as a city, if they're not getting as good as they are, that we're predicting they're going to be, we're going to have a tough choice then next year to get the revenue we need, I believe, as a city school district.
Well, and I think one of the unfortunate because it's circumstantial, right? But the raise we're about to ask for our teachers and this amount are perilously close. And so we are making a choice, but as I foresee conversation, I think the choice that's could be a driver of a choice, is we could be looked in the eye to say, you're making a choice that they do or don't support, right? I think if those numbers were more different, it would be an easier conversation.
Any additional questions in regard to the fund balance or comments, Mr. Abey?
I just want to clarify the point that Ms. Marshall made in the response that Ms. Gagliano made, make sure I've got it right and it's clear. She asked, I think, of the $1.75 million, how much of that have you allocated that is actually a one-time expense? And you said all of it. But then what you have to go is the next statement and say, next year we will have a series of one-time expenses too. So it's not like we're out of the woods I mean, if you look historically, year after year after year, how many one-time expenses we have, they come like the equipment, I mean, they're there. So it is technically a one-time expense so that, you know, from a budgetary standpoint, you can do it. But in reality, it's closer to a recurring cost that we're going to have to fund.
And then that's helpful clarification, actually. So if I subdivided that, and again, then to the next layer, just from accounting principles, of the 1.75, how many are single-time expenses that would not be recurring in your expectation? So capital expenditure, for example.
I can get that number for you, but I would still go back to the majority of it would be items that we will have to, services we will have to purchase or items we will have to purchase.
That's
There'll
helpful.
Be, you know, a small amount of it that we could say, okay, we're not buying any equipment this year, no matter what. We're not, you know, so on and so forth. But I definitely did not tag any salary or benefit to be funded with one-time money.
Ms. Engel.
One of the things that I did, I was uncharacteristically good today and got up and started on this at 6 in the morning. So I have my little cheat sheet of everything that's tagged funded from non-recurring money. You can take pictures of it. So an example of one of those things that technically we can, it's legal, call textbooks a one-time expense. It's one time this year, but Keyes and I were both on the board the last time we struggled with putting the money in recurring for textbooks, because when I was first elected, textbooks were funded out of fund balance every year, and every year it got tougher to do, and we really struggled to get the money in recurring dollars for textbooks. And I remember how painful that was, and I'm really not looking forward to doing that again, because the reality is, until every kid has a device and until the content publishers are willing to give it away, we're going to have to buy textbooks, whether they're physical or online or something. We're still going to have to buy this content every year. I'm hopeful that it will cost less. I'm very optimistic it will weigh less. But, so yeah, it's legal. We can do it. I've been through that before and it wasn't fun getting out of it. At the same time, in this city, I think we can all see that we are on the verge of really good things happening. I mean, we already have a number of new businesses. I'm waiting for our sales tax to tick up. It has to. As crowded as Kroger is every time I go there. The mall will be opening, and that will make a difference. We have one new business already announced that hopefully will bring in some new residents buying new homes. And it's my understanding that there are a couple more in the pipeline that will be announced before too long. So I think we're really on the brink of good things happening economically. The question is the city willing to share that largesse to help make up for us really taking the fund balance down to the wire?
Other comments or questions? Then let me move to a next question, Karen. I think we need an explanation, but Sarah, I hope you're over there paying attention. An explanation, because this is a topic that is in the news. It's not very well explained in the news. I know Sarah will do a great job of explaining this in the news. But the question is that the governor, in his budget that he signed, allocated a 4% raise for, a 4% raise. That's not actually a fact. So it's important for us as we go through this budget to be able to say to people who say, well, I read in the paper where the governor set aside 4% for salary increase. to give the correct explanation. So now's your chance to give us all that information so we are correct in what we say and prepared.
Okay. BEP is a formula, and part of the formula includes a instructional salary component, and that particular salary level used to be $40,447. That's what they would pay per licensed person to us. So think about our salary schedule versus that salary. They have increased that salary to $42,065. It's an increase of $1,618 for every licensed position that is in the BEP. In our case, that's about 280 positions out of 406 licensed positions. And of that total, 72% is funded. So you can see it starts out and trickles down. And that's why when we speak about it, we're always talking about whatever percent is proposed at the governor's level, the funding that supports that in our case is typically at about one-third of the actual cost. Does that explain it?
It does. Would you be so kind for the board to kind of put that in a cheat sheet for us so we could have that information at our need to explain it accurately? Questions there?
Question on that.
Okay, Mr. Eby.
On that BEP, that is, those numbers that you gave were for teaching staff, professional staff, correct? Licensed, right? Then we are suggesting providing a raise for all staff.
That's correct.
And so when you put that into the equation, it's even less, right?
Yes, they've actually formula, they've actually bumped up the salary amounts for the non-licensed categories that they list. But keep in mind that not all classified staff are even in the BEP. So, for example, the whole business office is not in there.
And the number of positions that they give you, like for nurses, is one out of 4,000 or something like that. Doesn't make sense. So, again, I think the more information there we can have, as the chairman says, then, you know, we can demonstrate to people that, you know, when they say the state is giving a 4% raise, it's to a very, very small fraction of what our overall employee is. And we all believe that every employee who hadn't gotten a raise in the last couple of years deserve a raise.
Other comments or questions?
Mr. Fillar, if we're moving to a next subject, I'll just move the slide here, and this is another area where I'd like some feedback from the board. And again, the question here is the reductions due to attrition. So just getting some discussion from the board about that.
Yeah, I want to be sure I understand. So the one reduction at Linden, is that a body? I mean, you said the three due to attrition, we weren't losing those people. So are you saying we actually will lose a person at Linden?
The person will be going back, or be going to Jefferson. So this person will not be losing a job. Linden will lose a position due to enrollment, but this person has the appropriate license to fill in for the Jefferson position.
Is this a classroom position or?
It is teaching.
Okay. All right.
I don't mean to jump
ahead.
In.
No,
and,
go ahead.
And consequently, the person that we are talking about for the last 2 years has requested a transfer to Jefferson. Yep. So we're actually able to grant that this time.
Cool. Good. And again, I think, too, just a comment is important here as we look at our enrollment to be able to answer the question if your enrollment's not changing and how are you balancing staff? Well, here's how we're balancing our staff with our enrollment at this point in time. Well, we hope the day comes where enrollment obviously increases and we add back in, but to me that answers that question, that we are paying attention to that. Ms. Hagel.
Well, but this is an odd year in that the enrollment changes are very heavily weighted toward elementary school. That middle school is actually expected to increase and the high school is going to increase slightly. And I guess my concern is with reducing the high school by attrition, which is the easiest way to do it, but with new requirements from the state in recent years where every student has to have 4 years of math, the math department is under a little bit of stress. So if we got to a point where we could fund one more position, that's one we might want to consider, because that's, you're looking at, a few years ago they had 1,400 students taught by 17 staff. Now they have 1,600 students taught by one fewer.
Yeah, and in this position, again, this is the easiest way for us to do this through attrition. And we shared with the board some information in our work session a while back on class sizes. And as your superintendent, I feel very comfortable with our class sizes, where they are. I'd probably consider us one of the luckiest, schools in the district right now at this time on class sizes. So I think there's some ability. And again, that's where this is easy through attrition. The hard work is to come back to the board with a, like I said, a right sizing piece of FTE being spent where they need to be spent. You'll notice we don't have any middle school positions up here. We want to keep that middle school model. The only way we're going to lose some staff at the middle school is to come back to the board, and please don't, that's not what I'm saying, but the only way you'd be able to take staff away from the middle school is to go to a junior high model. And I don't think that's something the board wants to discuss at this point. So that's why you're seeing elementary and a high school position here for attrition. Another point to make here, there will be no loss of AP sections, even though we're reducing this social studies, recommending the reduction of this social studies. So that has been, David Bryan is working on that. They will have a staff member that will be able to offer that AP course. So no programming affected, nobody losing their job, slight increase in class size.
And one thing that I don't see is an addition for the mechatronics position, and you said that you maybe had found another way to work with that. So is that
that's moving forward, and we have a great hire, and they're going to be able to offer that in the sections allotted to that department at this current time. Now next year, I think based on who we have down there and the excitement about the program, I fully expect that program to expand. But that'll be something we, again, based on enrollment, right sizing, where do those FTEs go?
So we have current staff who can teach that.
We just hired someone that can do that. Yes, we will be using that machine.
Okay, so I'll play the devil's advocate now. In your enrollment, you said we're decreasing by 46 students. There's a loss of 4 teaching positions here, but there's a gain of 8 additions. They're not all teaching positions, but some of them are teaching and some of them are teaching. So it's a net gain of 4 people. So you're losing students, you're gaining people. Explain that to me.
I think some of this isn't, and I'll just use the technology positions you see there for the additions. Some of these things that have been cut in the past, so we're really getting back to levels that we probably should have been at the beginning. So we lost 2, I think, techs, Mr. Kofer, years ago. This is trying to get back to that point, and I'll tell you, we're not even close if once we go one-to-one for the needed text to computer. We also had an elementary behavior classroom in the past. That was cut during past budgets. So I think what you're seeing here is the highest priorities that I can give to you based on all of the information that's been shared. So it is true that we're losing some positions and they're adding back in different areas. And then again, I'll keep being a broken record, that kind of goes back to the whole right sizing piece that I'd like to bring back to the board. Not enough time this year, but for FY17.
Can you explain to me the elementary behavior teacher in TA, and do we have one of those at every school, or is this, just explain it to me.
I may call on Sherry out in the audience here, but I'll do my best. Dr. M, you can help. But really, we're seeing an increase of students that are coming to us with some severe behavior issues. And what we're hearing from teachers, from administrators, from parents is there are some children that just have some difficulties maintaining themselves in a classroom to the point where it impacts the other students in that classroom. So this would hopefully be a piece where we could provide some services to these students, again, always with the goal to get them back in the regular classroom, but it would be a resource for some of our students that just have an incredibly difficult time. Hal is here. You know, I think it also could reduce some of the students that we send somewhere else at a very high cost, because we can't offer some of those services. So I hope that answers some of it, Mr. Eby.
No, it does. So is this a full-time person in TA at one school, or is just one school going to have it and the other three elementary schools won't have it, or what?
It would be one classroom at this point, so we'd have to talk about how we would transport those students that needed to be over in this school. But yes, we've got a couple schools vying to have that in there, which is great, to have that program in their school.
Other questions or comments? Ms. McClain.
So we only have three teachers who are retiring or moving?
We have more teachers that are doing that, but the other teachers really aren't ones. I'm trying to think of some examples, Dr. Lee, but some teachers that you just cannot not have that position. Dr. Lee, do you know the rest of that list?
I got it. Oh, yeah,
hold on.
We've got like literacy specialists. We have some positions that supplement and support instruction. And so if those go away, then those positions no longer exist. So a school would not have a literacy specialist.
I think what we did with the list you see here, like I said earlier, no programs are impacted with this loss of attrition. We didn't want to impact programs at this point in the game. These positions, they will have a brief increase in class size, but the programs are still offered, AP is still offered, students aren't losing things. In these other instances, they would.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Eby.
I'm just curious how the conversations are going on with the city with regard to sharing the communication supervisor.
That conversation has not been had recently. Again, I'll meet with Mark this Friday and try to get a little more clarity on if we can reduce our side of that and hopefully partner with the city on that.
While we're thinking for just a moment, let me just go over our schedule with each one of you. Tomorrow's meeting again is at 5:30. And the purpose of that meeting would be to go over the line items in the section of the budget entitled Description and Justification of Budget Appropriations, General Purpose School Fund 141. We'd do that, and of course, other questions along the way. This would give you a chance to review this section, to ask questions. I can't anticipate there'll be a lot, but there could be. I've been fooled before. So we'd do that tomorrow night. Then on Tuesday, which is our regularly scheduled meeting, that is also a public hearing for the budget. And help me with this, Lynn. The public hearing on the budget is before the regular scheduled meeting, starting at 5:30. Is that correct? It's part of the regular agenda. Where does it come in the regular agenda? Do we know? Is it?
Mine says 5:30 Tuesday for this public hearing.
Right, that's the board meeting as well, but the public hearing is first before we get into board meeting business, I guess is what I'm trying to get in my mind.
It's under items for action because it's a first reading.
Okay.
So you'd have the public hearing, and then you'd have items for action.
Right.
So the public hearing probably is at the beginning of the meeting.
Right. Yeah. Okay, and on that day, along with the public hearing, is first reading, so we would vote on where we are at that point in time in the budget. Then on Tuesday, the board will make a decision if we need to come back again at 5:30 on Wednesday, May the 27th, for additional discussion. And then on Thursday at 4:30, we would meet for second reading to adopt the budget. Mr. Eby.
Yeah, I agree with what you say. Here's, again, for clarification purposes. So if you had any changes or recommended changes to the budget, those don't take place until the night of the first reading, or do we do that tomorrow night during the line-by-line review?
I think we can, and correct me if I'm wrong, we can make changes tomorrow night during the line-by-line review, but we wouldn't actually vote on
right.
those changes until then.
I just wanted people to understand.
Yeah. Other questions, Dr. Borchers, additional comments? Go ahead.
This is just a clarification. On page I, under the state funds, I just want to make sure I understand. I'll read it to you. It says, the FY16 budget as proposed to the Board of Education shows an overall increase of $366,000 in funds from the state, period. In the next sentence, the basic education plan portion of state funds reflects an increase of $569,000, which reflects the April estimate. So $569,000 is more than $366,000. So are those two additive, or is there, I'm just trying to understand.
What page are you on again?
It's page I, highlights of the FY16 budget.
The answer to that is the BEP is actually increasing, but other line items in the state revenue category are decreasing. So your grand total is less.
All right. So you just to make it clear, you might put an even though in between those two sentences. The 16 budget as proposed shows an overall increase of 366, even though the basic education increases by 566. Otherwise, because it was really confusing. So, thank you.
Ms. Marshall.
Now, while we're on this topic, I did have just a couple of definition questions while I'm catching up here. General funds and federal funds, can you help me understand the distinction there? Someone?
Yeah, I was just looking for the place to put even though.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. I can direct you to page 30, outlines your state revenues. And page 31 would be the federal revenues. Both right. of those categories fall within the general fund. And then we have a separate fund, federal projects fund, which is 142. And those categories that fall into the federal projects fund are listed on, let's see here. Table of contents, get it for you.
Really disappointed you don't have that memorized, Ms. Gagliano.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Federal projects are listed on 15 to 17.
Okay. But if memory serves, federal funds have parameters about the way they can be spent and budgeted specifically.
Absolutely.
Yes, that are different from everything else.
Absolutely.
Okay. Sorry, as I go through and I'm matching things up, I'm just trying to make sure I understand.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, another question on the text. IV summary. First sentence, FY16 proposed general school purpose fund totals 53 million, blah, 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 which is an increase, decrease. Is it an increase?
It's an increase.
All right, so take out the word decrease.
Okay.
It was in parentheses, and I would think it was increased too,
okay.
But parentheses usually means decrease, so.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
The best
one of the reductions in state funding, I think, was the LEAPS program. I noticed that's been zeroed out. Was that a grant that we didn't get, or they're just not doing anymore?
It's a grant that we are not getting, and so we're combining the services with Century or 21st Century.
It was reduced funding due to non-government not making any more money, so they just reduced that and sent us less money than they have in previous years.
And follow up, that's being combined with what?
Other grants,
like 21st Century Grant.
Okay.
I think they've had to reduce some of their services, but they've tried to carry forward most of the service with the grants they do get.
Other questions or comments?
I saw in the paper where Anderson County is not looking at, I think the mayor there wants to hold the taxes flat there. Have we pursued with Anderson County Board of Education or system or, because I know they were asking for an increase for technology, for some activities, anything that we can do there together or been done together or should we be doing differently?
Mr. Foster and I talked last week. And we had a discussion about that, about if our board would be willing to come together and be with the Anderson County Board at some point. What I asked Mr. Foster was, can you give me a high-level summary of what you're asking, what the benefit is to the Oak Ridge schools, so that I could get that to our board so that we could determine what you would want to do and support publicly. So, and I haven't received that yet from Mr. Foster, so if I get that, I'll zip that out immediately, but I didn't think the board would want to go into that not knowing all the details of what was going to be asked and what the benefit would be to the Oak Ridge schools.
Now, you might give him a call back and just say that the board's asking the question.
I can do that.
Ms. Hagel.
Another one on the revenue side, since we don't do that in line by line, is the federal impact aid, the Section 8003, which is, every year we send home forms with the students, say, do your parents work on federal property and so forth. And that is a huge decrease from 70,000 down to 8,000. It's on page 31. Mm-hmm. Have we truly lost that many students whose parents work on federal property? Are they just not turning in the forms, or what happened?
That particular revenue line item has been all over the place in the last few years, and as we've had positions change at central office, it has been assigned in different areas, but in tracking it down and trying to get some feel for it, we did some research, and the money that we received this year for it was actually for 2 years ago, and the report that was filed last year has a question about it. I mean, it's like 3 years messed up in receiving what we're supposed to receive versus what we put in, and the questions on it, if there are any, come back two years later, and so we just put in there what we had received this year, not knowing how the outcome of that's going to be.
Because I know that a number of our teachers do heroic work in getting the students to get those forms signed and bring mm-hmm. them back. When Sarah was in high school, she had to bring donuts for the entire class because she was the last one to bring it in. It wasn't late. It was still on time, but she was the last one. So I have to give Miss Albert credit for that one. That was a stroke of genius. So I guess the answer is we don't know why the amount is so much less, because
that used to be several hundred thousand dollars a year.
Yeah, and for many years it was around the $70,000 range since I've been here. And you can see for the audit report in 14, it was 47. And then, you know, for, I was, you know, trying to be thinking of it in good terms for FY 15, I put 70 back in, but I think we've only received 8 this year, so.
And we have principals that are tracking down parents. For example, I was talking to Ms. West at Woodland. She was in the car rider line with parents that she knew she had gotten the forms to and they haven't given them back, and she's knocking on their window when they're waiting to pick their kids up going, can you fill this out for me right now, and I'll stand here and wait. So they're still pursuing parents actively.
Can we advertise that through the PTAs or something like that? I mean, do we, I mean, get
we,
that message?
We blast it. We blast. Impact Aid is coming home. We need you to fill it out. We need you to bring it back into us. We blast it.
Well, as the spouse of a retired federal employee, do we explain clearly why? I know it was years, even as a military spouse, that it took me to figure out, and I finally asked the question. And even, I mean, so I don't know that everybody necessarily understands the scope and the impact to our budget. And so I think I understand the technical jargon for what the form is. I don't know that everybody, as parents, puts together the impact that that has to their kids specifically and to their school. So maybe finding another new and improved way to communicate that would be helpful.
I would anticipate, and I'm just trying to think back when I was teaching, that each year it seemed like the number of students in the class that were affected by that decreased. And you look at Operation Sites Must Equal 10% of enrollment or 100,000 or 1,000 in average daily attendance. I mean, it'd be interesting to know exactly what our numbers are. I anticipate we may be thinking our numbers are up here, and they're not really where we think they are. Well, I think that number has really probably decreased over the last several years.
Well, go look at Pellissippi at 5 o'clock.
Right.
I'm sure the number has decreased in recent years. I was just thinking, I don't think it's decreased almost 90% since last year.
Right, I agree with that.
Unless there are only five parents impacted.
But that 5-15 budget is not good.
Yeah. Because that would have been 20% in our house alone. So.
Well, I think Ms. Marshall is right, though. I think, you know, people, I mean, you hear impact aid. Well, I mean, I'm not, you know, I mean, what does that mean? They have this perception of one thing, and they don't recognize the benefit of it, and I think we need to do a better job of getting people to understand what impact aid is.
Well, and I understand that there are restrictions on what kind of a form we can send home and which form. Are there restrictions on what we can say about the form?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there are parameters then.
Once again, I can't speak for those people. It's been a while since I was in the classroom, but I would anticipate there have been really no changes that the staff, I mean, just like Ms. Eagle said, I mean, that was one of the things that we put the fear in. If you didn't get this back in, it doesn't matter whether you understand what it is or not. You've got to get this back in. It has to be signed or else. And I bet that's still there today.
Can Sarah, while she's writing this great report, put a headline, you know, Impact Aid brings money to your schools, fill out the forms, headlines.
It's a PSA on behalf of our school system.
Could we just email the form to parents?
If I remember correctly, you have to hand it. It has to be handed to them.
But But what we...
speediness of the federal government's got to be paper.
What we probably could do, though, is put a notice in the paper. These forms have gone home. It's very important that you return them. This does supplement our school system, and it's money that we don't have to ask city council for.
Okay.
Can someone explain to me the instructional contingency fund?
That would be page.
What page?
41. Well, part of it's on 41, and it's mentioned in other places as well.
It's on page 7. This is an area of the budget that includes a number of items, and they're actually all detailed out here by dollar amounts. But it's a placeholder line that the board can approve expenditures to be moved. They're budgeted here, but the actual expenditure will take place somewhere else in the budget, and the board approves when that happens. But this is just we really don't have any other place in our budget where we have a contingency, and part of this is contingency, and part of it is, for example, the intercession expenses that are in there. It's an amount of money that is planned to be spent, but the actual line items that it will come out of is yet to be determined, so it's being held there. That's an example.
Can you give us an example of how that's been used this year, a specific?
Yeah, the particular line in there that talks about $300,000 as a placeholder for potential grants. What that means is that it's a placeholder on the expenditure side and on the revenue side. So our budget allocation is approved by the city, a total amount that the schools is allowed to spend. If we receive grants of $100,000 during the year, we can't spend them unless our overall appropriation includes that money. So in this case, of the $300,000, we would move $100,000 out to the line items that are appropriate for that grant, and then also the revenue line item. So we wouldn't have to go back to City Council to increase our bottom line. It's actually something that the city recommended we do because of the fact that we have to come back for two readings and then go to them for two readings, and it really stops operations. And this way, as long as the board has two approvals on it and it's within our bottom line that the city has approved we can spend, then we can move forward.
So this accounts for general grants to the school system, not grants made for specific instructional purposes?
Any grants.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what we're trying to do is, I think, and I didn't live with it, you guys have done that, but we're trying to not have to go back to the city, which mm-hmm. could be a two-month delay, and actually if we want a grant and we want to move forward with something, but we have to wait for 2 months to actually use the money.
As I recall, a lot of it in the past, and maybe with a decreasing enrollment, but are you planning a decreasing enrollment? If all of a sudden you get a surge in students or something like that, you've got to have funds to be able to hire a teacher, and that's one of the contingency. And that was something
that's one of the items that's in there, a placeholder of $70,000, $75,000. So if we don't need to use it, then it's not spent out.
But contingency is a cost. I mean, you've got to include a contingency in there. That would be worse than running out your fund balance, because you don't want to have to go to the city council and ask for operating funds because you had some situation.
But to clarify, part of it is true contingency and part of it is flow through on grants. Okay.
So actually, it's a very little contingency for the size of our budget. I have one item that I'm not sure if Dr. Borchers shared with you or not, but it's a clarification to our budget timeline. There was a change this week we received from the city. It's for May 26th. Our public hearing first reading, you were talking about that at 5:30. On our calendar, it says City Council work session at 7. I was notified by the city this week that they do not meet on the fourth Tuesday anymore. They meet on the third Tuesday, and so therefore there is no work session scheduled. And so I said, oh, well, that's good. If they don't have a meeting and they'd like to come to our public hearing and first reading, they're more than welcome. And that it was our assumption that the reason this meeting was placed in here to begin with was to give the City Council a heads up on our budget before the night that we present it to them. So that would be an opportunity for them to attend if they're able. So that's out there.
And as we wind down here, I would just ask the board if there are questions after you leave tonight, questions tomorrow morning that can help us speed things up tomorrow night, please send those our way, and we'll be prepared to answer those questions and try to be as efficient as possible.
So we're only doing the description and justification of budget appropriations. That's the only thing we're going to go over tomorrow night.
That's the only thing we will go over specifically.
Okay.
Anything else that you want to bring up after that is fine, but that we will specifically go over each of those line items tomorrow. Anyone else? See you tomorrow night. We're adjourned.